Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue, and it's very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning. It's the 27th of February, and it is, I think, a very nice day. It'll be a very nice weekend. We're
radiant.
All looking forward to it. That's right. You're ever radiant, aren't you, Ray?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me introduce our panel this morning, and we'll get things started here. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
I like it, Joe. You said Ray was ever radiant. That was terrific. What a pun.
Yes, ever radiant. Okay. I want to give... Can you hear Rosemary?
Yep.
Excellent.
I'm now joining the group.
Excellent. Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, whose headphones are on and working, and we're all good. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And, Ray Graff is here. WAMC's Ray Graff.
Hi again.
Thank you for your... insightful reporting on
Rick Springfield's
buttocks.
Well,
it was actually Jessica's report, but still.
It was the tail end of the newscast,
that was the kicker story, right? Is that the
no ifs, ands, or buts about that?
That's right.
No, we're on a roll.
Okay, all right,
We'll move on. We welcome your input, and God knows, I'm sure you have better input than we do. Let's get started. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Feel free, panel, if you have anything that's on your mind, if you have any questions, if you have any things in the news that you would like to. I had a tough time coming up with stories last night because it just felt like we had talked about a lot of this stuff.
How about ISIS wrecking the museum?
That was hideous.
Yes. Do you want to start there?
Yeah.
It goes back to when the Taliban was first on our radar post the Russian occupation. So this is in, the 90s or early 2000s, when they destroyed that beautiful mountain carved
Buddha.
With Buddha. Yeah.
Yeah. So an estimated 300 people. This is the this really is it's an awful story. And let me just, here we go. An estimated 300 people have been taken captive. 30 villages have been emptied and irreplaceable works of art destroyed while Christians are forced to pay a tax to the Islamic State. This is really the depth of this and the breadth?
Yeah, the breadth.
Mm-hmm. Of it is really startling.
They filmed it like they should be proud of it, like burning up a human being or beheading a human being is something to be proud of and to boast of. They have men with sledgehammers in a museum destroying priceless, irreplaceable human artifacts. It's just awful.
One of the oldest Christian communities in Syria. Yes, go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, so if the purpose of their work is to get us all angry, let me just say they are succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if the idea is to get us all so angry that there's a religious war that breaks out, that they can go back to their people and say, we're against these people and we're for you. If that's it is working, I don't know about their side of it, but it certainly is working for me. And I am infuriated, and I know how these wars get started, because we all get so angry.
Historians in Syria are saying it's a tragedy and catastrophic loss for Iraqi history and archaeology beyond comprehension. I mean, you can just imagine if you went into, say, the Smithsonian or one of our repositories of great art and culture and just destroyed it.
Yeah, it's similar to the burning of the National Library in Sarajevo during the Bosnian War when Serb artillery set on fire the library.
The burning of the Alexandria Library all those centuries ago.
To Alan's point of, if this is what they're trying to do, what do you think they are trying to do? I mean, is this exactly it?
I think all of their actions have been provocative and aimed at starting a world conflagration. They see this as a great battle between two cultures. And I do think they want to
win. So this is part of an apocalyptic vision?
That's what I think.
Alan?
Sounds right to me. One of the problems that we have inevitably is that when you get a person or a group that has a philosophy that is abhorrent, then you ask yourself the question, where does it come from? Do they believe it? And in Putin's case, does he believe what he's doing, or is it just strategic? In the case of this group, do they believe in it? And would they be willing to give up their lives because of it? I don't think so. I'll be honest with you. I think they would be willing to give up other people's lives, but not their own. But they are going for it, and they have made the mistake that so many others have, that Japanese did in the Second World War and others. They really think that we're not going to do what we need to do in order to put an end to all of this. I truly believe we will, and one way or the other, we will.
But what is, and this is what we've been wrestling with for several weeks now, of what that is, right? And that's what we have to figure out, what it is.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
the
for
example,
right. For example, is it better for us to put people on the ground, which is what I think they want, or is it better for us to just negotiate with the Jordanians and the Egyptians and the others and say to them, listen, this would be non-productive for us to do it. It would show the United States once again, you know, involved in this kind of great Satan war. It has to come from a Muslim state to do it, and we will give you everything you need in order to get that done. Seems to me that's the only way it's going to ever really work out.
Well, and I think Israel should be involved in it, too. This is a regional conflict, and we're the superpower, but we're not in the region. So why are they absolved from this? They have money.
Well,
and
there
power
are many people,
resources.
There are many people, Rosemary, who would say no to that because it would again validate their claims about this being a Zionist conspiracy, and you know, that Israel is the tool of the West. I have a feeling our big problem all along has been with both the Iranians and others, has been constraining Israel from doing what they do so well in terms of this kind of confrontation.
Sure.
I don't think you're right about that. I don't think Israel should be involved in it if we can keep them out of it, because I think it just validates what these fools are saying.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other issues and some of the same issues, but some other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Williams College Museum of Art, featuring the opening reception of Warhol by the Book with curator and chief archivist of the Andy Warhol Museum, Friday, March 6th at 6 p.m., wcma.williams.edu. In Haydenville Woodworking and Design, for over 25 years, a small group of artisans designing renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture in the Pioneer Valley, haydenvillewd.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Rosemary Armeo with us, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Any letters you would like to share with us, sir?
Well, yes. I don't know that I'd go that far, but Tom says, didn't the French under Bonaparte do damage to the Sphinx? And then he says something else down here. He sent us another one. I don't like to read two from anybody, but there was another one about what else people have done. Anyway, Andy says on net neutrality, hi folks, it appears that we have won the first skirmish on net neutrality, thanks in part to the response to John Oliver's rant on his program. However, the big telecom companies vow to fight in this in court. Maybe some discussion on this is warranted to keep the common subscriber to know the dangers that still lie ahead. Mm-hmm. And Bobby says, when are we going to do something to stop these terrorists? They are beyond reason. Look how many years we, Europe, USA, put up with the atrocities saying, he won't attack us. Hitler's atrocities saying, he won't attack us. Let Europe take care of it, etc. I don't have the answer, but it probably will be law, says Bobby. Let's see here. Bonnie says, loved it when Ray riffed on Dairy Air.
Ah, yes.
See, Derriere, that's the same thing as buttocks, you know. And then I guess that's it. Joe, you see anything else?
I think that's good. We're good. Yep. All right, so let's move on to, I want to talk about Jihadi John, a Kuwaiti-born Londoner who was identified yesterday, and the identity of the killer known as Jihadi John was revealed Thursday. The profile that emerged was disturbingly familiar. A young man whose parents' decision to immigrate to the West afforded him a comfortable life and an education, but who ultimately found identity and success in extremist ideology. For months, he taunted, knife in hand, his voice slightly muffled behind the mask that became the grim symbol of Islamic State barbarism. His name is Mohammed Amwazi, and despite friends' description of a polite and quiet man not capable of violence, his links to extremist groups appear to have been longstanding, and he was well known to counterterrorism officials in London before he went to Syria. Once the name came out, it was very quick as to how much we knew about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were extensive files on him in Britain. It's sort of like a cult. It's reminding me like of the Manson cult, where these seemingly normal, meek people become part of a big movement and then become these sadistic killers. Awful. And
so,
it's also
so Rosemary, what would you do with this guy if you caught him? Would you put him to death? Would you hang him? Would you pull out his fingernails? What would you do?
I would put him on trial, like every citizen in the world deserves. And if he were found guilty, I'm sure that this would be considered a capital crime, multiple murders, and he should be put to death in a humane way. We are not killers. We are not ISIS.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I think it's really interesting that ISIS was careful to put a Londoner as the face of their murder. That's also, it's all so designed for propaganda and to speak to us.
It's also a mark of cowardice, of course.
How so?
Well, you know, we're not responsible. Somebody else is. We didn't do the beheading. We got somebody else to do it. I suspect that you're right, that philosophically you're right, but that they also don't want to take a certain kind of responsibility. Look, you remember at the Nuremberg trials when everybody got up and claimed that they didn't do it. They didn't know anything. They didn't do it.
Wow, I way disagree with that. I think they're boasting of what they're doing. Yeah. And with Jihadi John there, they're saying, look, you think you're so protected. We're right among you. He's one of us. He's one of you.
I'm interested in your Manson analogy because I think I understand the connection, but there's not... But we don't know that who that head is, right? We don't know
right,
who that Manson figure is.
They actually do. I mean, they do know who the beginner of who the starter the starter of this. And I think he's the one who is himself impassioned and believes in this and like Manson, crazy to those of us on the outside. He speaks to certain losers, people who are on the outskirts. This kid was not a big star. He wasn't going to be.
He was not a loser. He came from an upper middle class family. He went to a good school.
But that's not it. That's what we see as in. He felt out of the culture in the same way that the brothers in the bombing did. They did not feel part of it, and so they are enticed by ISIS, which makes them warriors for a great cause. fake though it is, false and distorted as it is, they become warriors for that, and heroes and swashbucklers, and these are 20 and 25 year old kids. Yeah, I can just see it.
And Raymond, you certainly don't believe for a single second that you don't have losers in private schools, do you?
No, what I'm saying is the conventional definition of an outcast or a loser, this kid did not fit.
Well, no, see, I don't agree with that. I think there are plenty of losers who, you know, who have been bullied, for example, in a rich school or a place like that. And losers don't mean people with no money. Losers are something else entirely.
Well, no, but he had success.
No,
he had a secondary education. He went to good schools. He was on.
He achieved in
many
fronts.
He would appear to have been in the conventional societal track for success.
Well, our culture over and over again shows that we don't know what it is that makes people disaffected. Mm. And it isn't just the terrorists. It's people who go off the deep end or who fall into mental illness. We don't really know. We don't get it yet. We haven't figured it out. So.
Well, we've seen rich lawyers be incredibly mean to their wives and to their kids, and you know, way over the top. What about George Metesky? What was his raising like?
Who's that?
It's quiet at the other end of the room.
I don't know who that is.
We don't know who that is.
Metesky. Yeah, well, I got you all. George Metesky was the mad bomber in New York City who used to leave bombs under subway seats. I just thought I'd mention that.
Terrific.
And I knew that none of you would know.
Well, thanks for doing that.
I don't know where to go from
here.
Let's
go to a break. Let's go back to the Rick Springfield story.
I mean, the Unabomber was the same thing, and
right.
That was
absolutely
the connection to the Capital District. That was a brilliant guy, you know, a lovely family, really,
right.
and a very privileged background, and whatever it was, mental illness or...
We're going to take a break.
Sure.
We'll pause it there. We'll be right back. I'm going to talk up to the post. roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable, into our discussion for this morning. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. I spent the break looking up and reading things about the Mad Bomber.
Oh, do tell.
I did my homework here, and I didn't know.
It's actually fascinating.
George Metesky.
George Metesky.
I remember it. The reason I remembered it so well is that I was living, you know, in New York. I was a young person at the time, taking the subway. And believe me, when I sat down on the subway, I looked under the seat because this guy was planting bombs under seats in subways. So it was very, very scary. It was a sort of a mass hysteria. But
16
I knew
years.
That none, I knew that none of you would know who he was because you're not old like me.
True.
Yeah, it was 16 years in the 1940s and 1950s.
There you go.
A fascinating story. Anyway, we welcome your fascinating stories or questions or comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's go on to other matters and talk about... Or do you have any letters, Alan, or are we good on that?
There are a few letters.
All right.
John says, Alan declared himself a Jewish man who loves Israel. Alan's love is blind and subjective. Journalism should involve objectivity. It's about what people do and not what people say. It seems that because of emotions on the subject of the Middle East, Alan has lost his ability to think objectively, and that's why I tune into a different station. I can get that kind of bias from Fox News, says John. Thank you, John.
Nice of you to tune into another station but still email this one. Appreciate it very much.
And obviously listening to every word that goes on here. Gotcha, John. Okay, let's see why they do it. You panelists seem mystified why they do it. I think it's simple in one sense. It is the same religion enthrall that is seen in most religions among a certain percentage of adherents. They will, in the name of serving God, do whatever their leaders tell them psychologically. Why anyone does this is a complex question, but I don't see the IS people as any different from such passionate followers, and that's from Jack, and I couldn't disagree with him more. You know, Jack, who writes quite frequently to us, but there is a big difference between what somebody does in a religion that involves itself with tolerance towards others and somebody who is does adherence to this kind of terrible, terrible actions. Jack, you're just wrong. Sorry about that. And let's see. Doug says, Rosemary, who's that? We should remember the abuse suffered by Ted K while attending school at Harvard at the hands of the CIA. His situation is no way in the same vein as these misguided fundamentalists. I think Doug is right.
No, it's the same idea of being disconnected and angry at authorities. I think they're similar ideas. Yeah.
They're not similar ideas. There's a big difference between being Jewish and being Catholic and being a Muslim who really believes in the Quran as opposed to some of these crazy people. I think there's a big difference. I don't know.
I don't think religion is in there. We're talking about a feeling of disaffectation with your culture, and that's regardless of being Jewish or Polish or whatever you might be. And so they adhere to a cult. It was Manson in one case who make you feel connected and important. I think that's how ISIS is drawing people. I think that's why we're seeing kids in Times Square and kids in London who are headed to Syria.
Hmm. Well, I think we're talking on parallel. I certainly don't disagree with you what the appeal is, but I do think that there is a fundamental difference between religions that talk tolerance, and Pope Francis, for example, and the precepts of Judaism, and what goes on with the crazies.
Add Islam to that. Islam also is in its written
form. I made that point. I said that there is.
This is not a religious
Islam
issue.
Who adhere to the? Yeah. Well, it is a religious issue, but we'll disagree on that. But it also has these psychological overtones. I mean, it does. There's no question that you're right in how people are appealed to. It just means that there's a difference in the people who are doing the appealing, I think. Anyway, so, Alan, you totally misread my note. I said there are such people in many religions who will do whatever leaders tell them. Of course, you are right that most don't, as most Muslims don't, and that's from Jack. Okay, I'm glad I read that. And let's see. John says, oh, no, we're not going back to John. We already talked about him. And that's it. Okay, so, and Bill says, how is this different from the Crusades? And then there is something about the Unabomber here. No, I don't know. Okay. That's it, Joe. That's what I got.
All right. Let's go to other topics. Anybody want to buy the Daily News? Anybody? Anybody? Wow. Anybody want to buy the Daily News?
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Why?
You know, every time I... every time I start yelling at Rosemary and Rex about how newspapers are not as glorious as they would have us believe, and I always tell the story. I tell my students, give me the same story from the Post, the News, and the Times. I'll tell you who wrote what paper it appeared in. The Post, easy. That's easy. Right wing, slant, yeah, we know. The Times, sort of down the middle journalism. The Daily News, I can never figure out because I don't know who Zuckerman has been doing business with. And in his announcement, he said he enjoyed the influence. Well, what do you think that is? The guys who own the newspapers are doing the influencing, and we know that. So this really does put that right where we need to see it.
Hmm. Newspapers are dying. I'm not sure this is worth the debate over it. He's selling it because it's has lost circulation. He has lost influence. He's bored with it.
How much will he get for it is a better story. I mean, is it still about, 480,000 daily subscribers or circulation of that. So is it still viable?
Well, Murdoch wanted it at one point, and then the negotiations broke down. We don't exactly know why. He would pay for it, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what the going price is.
But it is interesting because Zuckerman is supposedly worth billions of dollars. We do know that the New York Post loses money. And we have always been told that the Daily News was making money. So we don't know what the facts are here. But we do know that Murdoch loves having the kind of influence in the White House and other places that he has. So he takes a newspaper that loses money and he supports it. It's his little charity.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think will happen?
I think it's clear he'll sell it. He's given it to Lazar to hawk it and to see who wants to buy it. And somebody will buy it. He makes the point that a lot of people are reading it online, as I do every night, and that under the new model, it's probably worth something.
But you think he'll definitely sell because he said he's mulling it over. Yeah. But you think he'll definitely sell?
He says it's in a better position now than it's ever been in before, which I thought was shocking.
And what would you say?
He's a rich man in his 70s, and he wants to go on to other things. I don't see anything strange about this, and it'll be sold, and life will go on. It won't make a real big difference in anybody's lives.
Well, wait a second. You don't think there's a difference if Murdoch has not only the Post but the Daily News, which has always been competitive philosophically? I mean, you can read the Daily News and read between the lines, and you know that it is far more receptive of people of color and people of who have different ideas than Murdoch does. So if Murdoch gets both of them, what, you think that will make a difference? I think it does.
Inside sources are saying he is not the one interested at this point.
Correct.
Not yet. Not now. What if he had bought the New York Times when it was really on its uppers? What would we expected then? We know that the Wall Street Journal has fallen into Murdoch's hands. We know that the AM radio stations throughout the AM dial, you go from one to the other, and you hear nothing but this right wing rants of the Glenn Beck types, or the rest of them. So when you own all of that, it makes a difference, and then you meet
Warren Buffett will come out. He's another rich man buying up media outlets, so maybe he'll come in and save the day. I think ultimately news ownership is compressing. There's fewer of them, and that's always bad. But the internet has made the airwaves and whatever we call them now, the Ethernet, accessible to all. So there are alternative ways to get in plurality into our press. I don't think it all depends on the Daily News.
And you don't think it's going in a particular direction, Rosemary, that the people who have the most are buying them, buying every AM radio station that they can get their hands on?
Sure, rich people are buying them. And how is that different than how it ever has been, except maybe for a really brief time in American history? The news outlets have always been owned by the rich. And you hope for families that treat it fairly, like the Sulzbergers.
Not to have a fight with you, which I hate to do, Rosemary.
Yeah, it never happens.
But why in the world, do you argue on the one hand about the glories of journalism, and then here say, it's the way it's always been that rich people...
Well, I don't argue about the glories of journalism. You say that, Rex, and I do that. We actually are pretty, honest about its failings. And I think that this is part of a pattern in the United States that's gone on well into the 18th century, where newspapers were owned by political parties and by one point of view or another. And the only way you could really get a full picture was to read a lot, which smart people used to do. And now it's easier than ever because there's the internet. You can always get the other view.
Let's take a break there, and we'll be...
One of the things I thought...
Okay, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we will talk more. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Education program, online.unh.edu, and Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments, subsidiumtech.com. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome back to the Router. You're singing along there, right? Yeah. You having fun?
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thought I was in an elevator for a minute there. Going up or going down?
We're clearly going down.
Oh, yeah. Been that way for 20 years.
For the count.
I'm looking at CNN. There's a monitor right over Rosemary's head, and you will notice, Rosemary, on the right-hand side of the monitor, it says Homeland. There is now a countdown clock for the run out of Homeland Security funding. The Homeland Security runs out of funding in 14 hours, 13 minutes, and 1 second.
Oh, but they fixed it. Boehner agreed to a deal.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but they have the great graphic and let them keep doing it.
They were hoping for that.
Yeah. And in 3 weeks, we'll do it all. And in 3 weeks, we'll do it all again.
Alan's right. Yeah, big deal. This is for a 3-week extension. I mean, couldn't they at least make it for a few months? Give us a break.
So we'll see.
Joe, if I can.
Yes.
If I can, let me read Stu's letter. Alan, you said that Israel should not be part of the regional response to ISIS because it would validate the comment that Zionists are behind it. Validate means to convey confirmation. Instead of saying validate, I think you meant to say enable, that Israel's participation would enable those who spread lies about Israel, regardless of what Israel does, to use Israel's participation to facilitate more lies about Israel being the instigators, perpetrators at all. And that's from Stu. Let's see here. Kathy says, refers us to The Atlantic. We've talked about that article. The position is that ISIS is not an abomination from Islamic belief, that they are carrying out actions that are called for in strict, literal understanding of the Quran. And Blair says, the technology does not exist to grade teachers based on student outcomes. Who will teach less talented students? Who will operate on sicker patients? Statistical adjustment is not a valid alternative. And I can't tell you how much I agree with Blair on this.
Was that part of the show?
What show has he been listening to? Maybe we should talk about that.
Probably listening to the news. And I think he's right. I mean, the whole idea that, Cuomo keeps saying the schools are failing. Well, okay, if you're a great and talented and decent person and go into a failing school district or a school district that is not doing as well as Scarsdale, for example, and do this incredible work, and then have this governor come down on you because you're, quote, failing. I think this idea that Blair is telling us about the technology does not exist to grade teachers based on student outcomes is exactly right. Why would anybody do that if they knew that they were putting their head in a noose, an educational noose, by doing it? So I think it's a very important letter, and I'm glad he wrote it.
All right. Anything else, or are we good?
Let's see. The panel's handling of folks who critique and offer opposing opinions via email is immature, disrespectful, closed-minded, and deplorable. What hope is there for conversation and change with such indignant, uncivil attitudes? And that's from Mary Kay. Couldn't disagree with her more. I think we are very understanding of everybody who writes, but if somebody writes something that is just off the wall, we're certainly going to respond to it and should. And that's the way it is. So anything else? That's all I got.
All right. Let's go back to other topics. And, we mentioned, of course, net neutrality. But the FCC has okayed net neutrality. And I don't think that was any big shock. We talked about this earlier. Classifying broadband internet service as utility. And they voted on this on Thursday. Tom Wheeler, the commission chairman said the FCC was using, quote, all the tools in our toolbox to protect innovators and consumers and preserve the internet's role as a core of free expression and democratic principles. The new rules approved 3-2 along party lines are intended to ensure that no content is blocked and that the internet is not divided into pay-to-play fast lanes for internet and media companies that can afford it and slow lanes for everyone else. Those prohibitions are hallmarks of the net neutrality concept.
Well, it is a victory, and people who are against Monopoly, Tim Wu and Zephyr Teachout, et cetera, are all exclaiming over it, and I think that's great. But there's a lot of uncertainty ahead. This is going to go into courts. It's going to go into litigation. What we have done is set up the Internet now as a public service, a public trust, different than an information source. And that means it can be regulated under a law that goes back, a broadcast law that goes back to the 1930s. So it's very strange what might come out of this. We have to continue to be vigilant.
Well, it's interesting that the big internet companies were all in favor of this happening. The cable companies not in favor of this happening. Right. So I think we just have to follow the money. And interestingly, we don't know exactly how much this will cost ultimately. Usually when the federal government is involved in regulating something, there'll be more taxes. However, the details aren't even out yet. So we really can't comment on that.
Well, I'm less concerned about the details, Ray, than I am about, what they may do. I mean, I think the FCC has had an opportunity and used it, shut down by the courts, to sort of start to talk about what we could say on the radio, for example. And that is something that, as Rosemary indicates, we have to be very, very careful about.
So you mean that there could be an implication here that down the road, federal government has much more to say about content on the Internet?
Yes.
That will
that
be contested.
And everything else.
Yeah, that will definitely be contested, I think.
Sure.
The way is open.
Sure.
Now.
I mean, well, yes. And if you put the government in charge, somebody will lobby the government and say, I'm getting stuff on the web that is unacceptable and it all should be regulated. Well, you know, we have the words that you can't say on the radio. And now what will happen, if the federal government, if the feds come in and start to say what is acceptable on the web? Mm.
So then you have China.
Then you would have something along the way to China. China, I don't think you would have, because these guys, because we have a judicial system that is independent and has the capacity to say no to this nonsense.
And also is actually rather supportive of the First Amendment, traditionally, has been very supportive under all kinds
of court
regimes. The Supreme Court, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
yep.
That is a protection we have that China does not, that's all.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. So Christopher says, some since the start of the Iraq engagements, U.S. and coalition forces have destroyed and opened for looting hundreds of Iraq's museums, libraries, archaeological sites, as well as the five of the Syrian World Heritage sites. And then there's much more, and that's what I'm reading. And then there we are.
Okay. Let's talk about CPAC and what's going on there. And I was watching, good entertainment, watch Chris Christie and Laura Ingraham together.
Oh, really?
Oh, good.
Oh,
good
Dancing
stuff.
With the Stars?
Yeah, it's good stuff. CPAC shows how the GOP's 2016 strategy of avoiding the MSM could backfire. So this is National Harbor, Maryland. Republicans said after the 2012 election that they wanted to radically change the model for presidential debates in 2016 so that conservatives would do more of the question asking than the liberal media. On Thursday, the Conservative Political Action Conference, the GOP got a first look at how that might go. Talk radio personality Laura Ingraham conducted a 20-minute question and answer session with Chris Christie, and Fox News host Sean Hannity, queried Texas Senator Ted Cruz in a departure from the regular standard speeches that presidential hopefuls give to this annual gathering of activists. Ingraham's session with Christie heavily focused on Christie's vulnerabilities, while Hannity's briefer interview with Cruz was marked by an awkward exchange over former President Bill Clinton's libido.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Jeb Bush, that's the only hope for Republicans. I'm surprised Christie's still in there fighting away. I thought that he was out of it. It speaks to the weakness of I don't think Jeb Bush is weak, but it speaks to the weakness of the Republican field that he's still in there as a contender. don't you think?
You know what? It'll work out until the very end, until the voters in New Hampshire and Iowa cast their ballots. And then the guys who are out there beating the hustings will retire. It is still making my eyeballs roll at an incredible pace that George Pataki is up in New Hampshire thinking that he's going to be president or maybe even vice president. Well, he can't, but he doesn't know that. And if he's got the money and he's got some backers, he goes and does it until they say no.
Well, I don't know. We may be unqualified to talk about this. I've been reading some editorials in the Washington and Virginia area for a news organization. I've been reading the editorials, and I have to say I'm really shocked by it because I'm up here in Blue Land, and these editorials are all about horrible policies by Barack Obama that are deceitful and evil, and there is no global warming. That's just a debated partisan issue. Ideas that we have gotten rid of here that we don't even consider at WAMC, and big blocks of people in this country believe in and put stock in that. So I don't know. When I see the Hannity, I can't even listen to him. I don't know.
You know, one of your
I'm speechless.
To one of your points earlier about Christie still being in it, Laura Ingraham at the beginning of her interview said, "Look, this has been a rough couple of months."
She did emphasize that
for you in the media. They said most observers say, "quote, you're toast."
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that all the money's going to Jeb Bush,
and his response to that was also pretty worked out, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, and these are implementation regrets, I believe was his terminology. Implementation regrets.
Better known as a bridge too far.
Yeah.
God knows I've had implementation regrets.
Yes.
All right, we are out of time. I want to thank everyone who has been with us, and of course, thanks to our panel, Alan and Ray and Rosemary. Thank you very, very much. Have a great weekend.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan. I guess Alan's gone. Okay.
Well, that didn't take long.
Sitting at the round table on WAMC.